All right, it is 5:30, so I'm going to call to order the City Council work session for Tuesday, July 14th. And then we're going to go to topics of discussion. We're going to jump number two up to number one. Melinda, so if you want to grab a seat with the budget, maybe going into some deeper discussion, we'll do this one first. And then we'll turn it over to Brian and Stephanie to go over the case. Start talking about it. Thank you, Mayor.
So typically Sean would be here to present the information as he's working the most on a project like this. Unable to make it tonight due to some personal needs with his father, but between Steffi and I, we should be able to fill in the information along with help from Melissa here, or Melinda, sorry. But ultimately tonight, the work session case, and there's a subsequent case on the regular meeting to consider a purchase agreement and ultimately move forward where Elevate Hope House would construct a misuse project here in town. Location would be just east of New Horizon over there. Some of you might remember the Storytellers Cafe project that was in consideration for a number of years. I would say it's a very similar project to that, where there would be some commercial space on the first floor, coffee shop, and some seating areas, as well as include a three-bedroom apartment, or three apartments upstairs. And Melinda, please correct anything if I'm saying anything wrong. But as part of the discussions that Sean and Elevate Hope House team have had, they talked about the financing behind the project. And as part of the solution to financing the project, we have these local affordable housing aid funds available that come to us from the state. And within those funds, we previously had a couple discussions on a policy behind it, and the city as a whole is using those funds and focusing on kind of what a lot of cities are calling the front door program, where you can, if you're income-based eligible, acquire some of these funds to do improvements to your home. Within that draft policy, there's a provision where there's other eligible uses for these funds. And should a project come forward, council can consider it on a one-off basis. This project is really that exact match to that paragraph where in the discussions, the request in front of council is to utilize $250,000 of those funds. Part of the funds would go towards the land acquisition. We own that property. That's why there's a purchase agreement tied to this project as well. As well as $195,000 to go towards the construction costs related to the income-qualified apartments that would occur. This project, like I said, meets the income eligibility for the overall LAHA funds. So really the question in front of council tonight is, would you like to entertain, as part of the purchase agreement, subsidizing part of this project with those LAHA funds of the amount of $250,000, or a combination thereof, or not at all? I'll look to Stephanie, make sure I'm not missing any high points, and then maybe let Melinda speak a little bit more to the project as a whole and their success that they've already seen in Anoka County.
Yeah, please, go ahead.
Good, Stephanie? Okay, perfect. Thank you again for having us here tonight. Second time with some of you as well. We're just excited to bring this concept to the city of Ramsey. We have been blessed with having the mission to work with young moms and their kids experiencing homelessness for almost 10 years now. We've had our program operating since the pandemic. And what we do is we work with young moms and their kids, and we provide programming and housing for up to 2 years. There are many great organizations in the area that work with homelessness efforts, but a lot of those happen to be maybe more short-term, or they can only focus on single adults or single youth. And so our vision since 2016 has been to help moms with their kids, to keep them as a family unit, and to provide them enough time and support and community to be able to truly become self-sufficient by the time they're done living with us. And we've had some great successes of moms that have gone to school, received their four-year degrees, their two-year degrees, their own place to live. But what I'm sure many of you know, and that's why even the funds we're receiving from the state, is that affordable housing is becoming more and more challenging for individuals. And so since about 23-24, we've been focusing not only on our program, helping them and walking alongside them in community to help with self-sufficiency goals, but to also see how can we help with that bridge to independent living. And so in 23, we received an offer from Spring Lake Park High School, and their students helped us build our second home in their parking lot. We were also blessed with land donations that occurred at that time, and we were able to then receive free land, in essence, and then move a house from a parking lot up to our first acre, where we had a young mom and her children that had gone through the program in 2022 move in and rent it from us at a very reasonable amount for a monthly basis, and she's lived there for up to a year. We're so thankful for that opportunity, that awareness of how can we do more with affordable housing. At that time as well, we started to really get to know trade partners in the community. And so national partners like Lennar Construction have come alongside and supported us with insight, trade partner relationships, finances, but also just local ones. Two of our three homes were supported by Prestige Drywall right in Ramsey. We're so thankful for them. And so now we are actually in the middle of our third build. We had one more opportunity to build a home with Spring Lake Park High School, and we're expanding our opportunity to fill that second lot with a home that will serve six families and their kids for up to 2 years. So what we're running into now is we're out of land, and we still want to continue to support families. We're seeing the need for affordable housing, and it's not just about a mom coming off the street and finding a place to live and rent. We want a place for our families that have gone through the hard work, want a new chapter for their lives, and have done the work to have job skills, to have a career, to go to school, to be able to have a place they can stay in the community they've built roots and live for as long as they want to. And that's where this vision comes together for Gather, where not only is it going to provide a great community outlet for our community of Ramsey, which I've been tied to for forever with my kids at PACT and my home church of Northgate, but also to have an option for moms to be a part of this great community too, and for them to take what they've learned, continue working in the jobs they've obtained, continue their schools for their children in the community, and be able to thrive. So that's what we're looking for. It is a huge financial project. We understand that. And that's why we're coming to you about this option of LAHA funding. We believe strongly with great partners like we've had, with trade partners that we've used, that will be able to really bridge the gap financially in what is such a big conquest and dream. But it would be only so much better if we could partner with Ramsey to utilize those funds that you have received to bring this to reality as kind of a stepping stone so that we can keep going forward. We had great connections already with some drywall product companies that are ready to donate if this build is approved today, and so many other things, and we're just thankful. So I can pause there, and you guys can ask whatever questions you have.
Yeah, questions for Melinda?
Yeah, Melinda, for staff.
Any questions for Melinda right now? We can circle back.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I don't know if I understood you correctly. Yep. First, I thought you were saying this was a two-year window, and then it sounded like you're saying this is longer than that. Is it two different programs or two different pieces of the program?
Yep. So we have, by the end of this fall, we'll have three homes in operation. So our first home that we opened is a shared housing program for three families. Then our second home we opened is our first effort at affordable housing for a family that's gone through the program. The third one we're opening will also be a shared housing opportunity. So in both our shared housing homes, the moms stay with us up to 2 years, kind of do a hybrid transitional concept, and really we meet them where they're at, coming from couch hopping or whatever it is, to help work on stability and self-sufficiency and their personal goals for them and their family. What we're looking to build here in Ramsey is what we've done with that second one, but on an even more affordable concept, where our families will have worked out those goals, will have those jobs secured, will have ways that they're contributing to society or connected with our community, but want to stay here with their roots, and then they'll rent from us on a monthly basis to match that affordable housing concept. So they'll have some program requirements in regards to we check in on them monthly. We make sure they're supported. They're being good stewards of the apartments. But really, they're independent at that point versus in our shared programming. They have up to 2 years there. This will be as long as they need this.
Okay.
And they partner with us and are great stewards. Yeah.
Kirsten?
Yes. I thought, you know, I think this is an amazing opportunity for us. And I know that this is just goes beyond just the women that will be going into this program. It looks like there's a lot of like opportunities for our community to connect with you guys too. Just wondering if you could talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. So our vision for this Gather coffee house, if you will, is beyond coffee. We've had great connections with the community in regards to how we could partner with PAC Charter School for offering space for tutoring programs or other opportunities they may need when their doors are shut and things here are really only restaurants and bars that are available after 5. We've also had great conversations with local cottage bakers. Like, we plan for this to be, yes, coffee and a space to gather, but we want local business owners to be able to have a space that they can bring what they're doing to the community without the stress of brick and mortar, and really partner and elevate them and market them and help them thrive as well. We're also looking at local artisans to have walls that they can rent from us so we can partner on that too. But we really just want this to become a hub for the community, something that everyone wants to just come to and gather and build relationships.
Would you be willing to share a little bit more about, like, the layout too? How many, like, community spaces there are? And, you know, like, the sustainability of how you guys are getting your income.
Yeah. Do you guys have access to that in this meeting that we can put on the screen, or should I just kind of...
Do you want just, like, the floor plan?
Sure, we can show them that. Yeah, that would be great.
It should also be in the case as well. Under a site plan concept.
Still kind of small, but you kind of see it. So floor one is that gather space. So right off of Sunwood in that corner, right across from New Horizon, you would come into the entrance. What we've updated so far in our preliminary sketches, right, is that there'd actually be two entrances, because our thought is that while you have your main entrance right at the corner, we want one about halfway down as well, because we desire for this to be a place for the community. So if there are individuals or groups or small groups or businesses that want to do a time of getting together and have a place they can rent, then we can do a flex wall in the middle and they can have a private space while also allowing for the business to operate on the other half of the community during our offering hours. We have smaller meeting rooms you can kind of see on the left side, so it's kind of entrance at the top left corner, then it goes to a child place room area that both will be good if there's a large group meeting to have access to their children. Also great with some of our moms will be doing job skills to have their kids there with volunteers too if it's needed. And then after that are two meeting rooms that can be open to one, but also have the space to have two at that time. And then again, it's just a place to gather. That top, let's say half, all that furniture is flexible, so it can be set up stage however someone might need as we're partnering with the community. That second half is more permanent furniture currently in the vision, so we're always having that really constant centerpiece of a place to gather. And then upstairs, you can see on that second floor, that's where we have our three bedrooms currently sketched. We plan probably to add a little bit more into where that big X is of a place for, like, staff, volunteers have a place to go. But other than that, that's full open concept from your entrance through to give you that really open feel when you come in. That's your question.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Anybody else? Shannon?
Yep, back up to this X through it. You all of a sudden said that it's going to be where your staff is going to be, but there's no... entrances or hallways to that area.
So these are preliminaries. We haven't changed them since they were submitted in, I want to say, May. And so when this is voted through, we'll make those more specific updates and measurements. But we think we'll need a secondary place beyond the small office on the first floor. So probably an update to the hallway where it'll expand a little bit to that X, but still having majority of open space.
What else? Dan, questions for our staff?
Just looking at the purchase agreement, is it $85,000 that we're selling the land for?
Yep, so the purchase price would be $85,000 for roughly a half an acre of land. And then, so, you know, sorry, I'm trying to get the numbers in front of me again. So not the entirety of the purchase price would be covered under LAHA funds. And then another $195,000 towards the construction.
Are we, just high-level kind of stuff, are we obligated to charge a certain amount for land? You know, if we wanted to do it for a dollar, is that something we could? Is that...
Yep, so, like I said, we own the land. We do advertise it kind of as our asking price. That's all flexible and ultimately up to the city council. You know, if we do reduce down the purchase price, that does impact kind of the TIP 14 as a whole finance plan behind that, so there would be an impact, but
right, sure,
we could adjust for it. Ultimately, these LAHA funds are coming from all parts of Minnesota, so when we talked about that, you know, that was an option considered. We felt like, you know, utilizing some of these LAHA funds allows us to still get paid back for the land purchase,
sure,
that happened years ago, but still help the project.
Chris?
What even just answering to that, and we heard a little bit more at the EDA with Mr. Sullivan talking about it, that was kind of where he had maximized and figured out kind of a sweet spot and worked that out.
Okay.
And it worked. It sounded like that worked for them also, and the law of it. Everything worked good.
Perfect.
So,
that's good.
I love your idea, Dan.
And then Brian, the city's still getting paid the full amount. It's just that the LAHA funds is going to fund the other part of it.
Correct.
So we're not losing money on it. We're just allocating LAHA funds to make up the difference. Okay. Chana?
And speaking of the LAHA funds, we haven't completely launched that, from my understanding. So how are we going to project moving this money over here and having enough for our actual tax-paying citizens? Where are we?
Yeah, so we have a current balance of $435,000 in that fund. The front door program, so to speak, when we kick that off, we don't anticipate a need for $435,000 right away. And we do, I don't know if it was part of the work session case, but you know, we will receive more funds this year, so that fund will continue to grow as long as that sales tax that funds the overall program at the state level is in place. So we don't feel like using $250,000 of our current balance would jeopardize the other needs that can come out and the benefits from that program, especially as we continue to get annual revenue for that fund.
And just a little bit more information, just to piggyback on Brian. So we are planning on kicking off the front door programs, which we're calling it, until the beginning of 2027. And at that point, if we took off the $250,000 for this project, we would still have about $510,000 in there for the front door program.
And that money does expire if we don't use it.
Yes,
so if we said no to this, and then said we want to keep it all for the residents for the front door program, but then that program was underutilized, that money would be lost and it would have been wasted. So by using it for this, we not only use it before we lose it, but we provide a service to the community, and not only a service to the community, but selfishly speaking, coffee, arts and bakery. I mean,
healthy people.
That's
all great. I mean, there's multiple.
Oh, yeah, that too.
That too.
And we do have, is it two more years for sure of funds coming in on top of
a little teaser to what we would present in the regular meeting. So right now, we received almost $119,000 in 2024 of LAHA funds. We have to spend that by 2028. And then in 2025, we received almost $317,000. We have to spend that by 2029. And then we're estimating about $300,000 a year annually to bring in. So, yeah, the first 3 years, we're looking at over $700,000 of funding.
Chris? Well, before when we were talking about this, I feel, and we all, I think, said we don't want to fund apartment complexes or whatever with this money, and I haven't changed that at all, but this is different, so I'm definitely thinking of this as a different use. This is dissimilar to what we all, I think, agreed that we didn't want to use, so I think this is fine. It kind of the kickoff to our program, it does meet some affordable housing, which would be very usable. I still like our original idea, and I don't think that this is going to change that. I mean, you know, you had a good question making sure it isn't, but it doesn't sound like it's going to really affect that. So I think this is a good way to kind of kick off the program and then get into our front door program.
Yeah.
And then I just want to know about, like, the affordability period. I know our front door program, we have the program where if they sell within so many years, we will receive funds back. What are we looking at for if this Gather program, they get it up and running, and then all of a sudden they sell it in a year or so? How do we recruit some of that back?
I don't have that answer exactly.
Well, do you plan on selling it in the next year?
Sure don't. But we could look at that if we needed to. Yeah, I understand. It's not in my PA or anything, is it?
Yeah. That's what I was looking for.
While he's looking, can I give a brief update on the funding?
Yeah.
So for 2026, we'll receive about $354,000, and it comes in two payments. It actually should be coming in the first half, either this week or next week, and then at the end of December.
Okay. Other questions? Dan?
Just so I understand again, I should have read the case better, but How was the 250 decided upon? Was that kind of the request amount, or was that just what we decided we could afford? Or
Melinda, maybe you can jump in a little bit, but I know the original kind of number requested was 300,000, again, through Sean and his negotiating and trying to find a deal that makes sense for both the city and the developer. They landed on the 2050 with the breakdown between the two.
I don't want to speak out of turn, but if I remember right from some of the conversations, it was what can you afford without putting too much money on you right away, because if we ask for the entire amount and don't use LAHA funds, the chances the program gets off the ground quickly is not great. So I think the $85,000 was, this is what we think we can put towards it now and still maintain the momentum if the city can make up the difference.
That's because we would be doing like a cash payment, how this works, right, of the $30,000, and then we'd receive the $250,000. However, we find out through learning this together, we receive it. And then that offsets to get your purchase price closer to that $150,000 original list price. And then the remaining would help us pull off that first affordable apartment, give or take, right, with community support, and then go from there. Because also with it can only apply to percents of things that apply to the actual housing. And so we had some great connections with the county that mentioned the LAHA funds, because we also receive, they're called SAHA funds, from the county with the CDBG grants. And so it's a similar process. We kind of spoke to, like, whatever you're doing is going to be a percent, right? This isn't going to fund the coffee shop we're excited for the community, but it will help us do the affordable housing piece, and that's a percent from there with the land purchase, et cetera.
All right, I'll trust it. Worked out well.
Any other questions? Shannon?
Yep. Since our EDA meeting, I know we talked about the affordability period. I know you were talking about the one unit being an affordable home, but maybe not the other two at the EDA meeting. So can we clarify where we're at in that department?
Yes. Can you clarify a little more what you're asking me about the type of apartments I'll be offering, or are you speaking to the when we'll have them open by?
Both questions.
Okay. So all of the apartments will be affordable housing apartments, all three. Our plan is other months we'll go into them. And what we originally proposed, and I think it's in probably one of your attachments, the one that has a big picture on the front, we break down what percent will require of the residents that live there. So whether it's 30% income-based or 60% income-based, we're going to kind of have a flex scale with that. And then as far as the apartments go, I do have Nate here from our board. He's also with Lennar Construction, can speak to some of the actual cost of building apartments if we need to talk about that now. But we will for sure have that one done when we open, and then we were agreeing to the commitment of the following year having both other ones open as well. And that was no issue for us. We might have all three. We just wanted to, again, under promise, over deliver.
Okay. Anything else? All right. Well, I think it's a great program. It's a great use of the money. I see us not have massive participation in the front door program and for it to be lost. And I think it's a great fit for the city. You've shown great initiative integrating with the city and before this has even started, and currently with your future plans. So I think it's good. I'm giving a thumbs up. Yep. Okay. So we have consensus that we're good to go, and it'll appear on the regular agenda.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. See you again at 7.
Yes. All right, so we're going to head now back to case number 1 that got pushed to number 2, which is the preliminary 2027 general fund budget / levy discussion. Oh, I will say before we kick things off, we do have the ability to come back, obviously, at the end of the meeting, but we should get to number 3 before we get to the actual council meeting, because we're going to be voting on an aspect of number 3 as well, so we'll come back if we need to, but we'll start.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the City Council. So I gave you a lot of handouts, a lot of them you currently have within your packet, but when we get to talking about the capital, it's just such a big sheet that it'd be easier to read. But the first sheet that I'm going to talk about is, it says 2027 budget general fund only non-discretionary items. This was in your packet, but I added the bottom half on it to basically show that our debt service is also increasing about $38,000, and then the pavement management levy of $102,000. So when you add the overall general fund levy increase, so I'm talking about the non-discretionary items and the debt service, you're already looking about $945,000 increase over last year, so it's already a 4% increase.
Everyone clear on that? Okay, and that's the 944, 965 plus the 450 for the fire engine?
And the fire engine, we had that slated as coming from the HRA core funds or the equipment fund, so okay. We'll talk about that when we get to it.
So the 94 for that equals the 4.5%, not
yes.
The 1.2?
And yes.
Okay.
It's strictly, I did not include any capital within those numbers.
Okay.
So, and I did not pass out this sheet. This one is part of your case. And in the far left corner, this one is about all the budget requests. And in the far left corner, that is what represents a percentage increase. So each percentage increase, once you get at 5%, you're looking at about $1.2 million, 6%, 1.4. Just to put into terms what this 4% already represents.
Okay.
And so when we get to towards the end of the meeting, after we go over the capital and personnel, I think what staff is looking for, and Brian, correct me if I'm wrong, is that we just kind of want to get an idea of where council wants the levy to be for the overall percentage increase, just to give us kind of a starting point.
To add to that a little bit, the levy plus kind of the use of the TIF 14 funds that are now being generated and we're repaying interfund loans from years ago.
So in past years, we've gone over personnel and capital, and we left everything on for council to see, just because these are the requests of staff and the needs at this time. And a big item that came up as part of our overall staff survey was that there wanted more transparency within the budget process. So just felt it was fair to include everything at this time for council just to see what has been requested. So that is why all these items are on here also to start with. So I'm going to start with personnel. So that's this little sheet that has the orange. Our orange would have the start. And so there's reclasses, new positions. And so I'm going to start with the reclass, and that is the building inspector to building inspector 2. So I'm going to look at the individual department heads to kind of give a brief summary of why that position or reclass should be in place. And this year did also add, in regards to the staff, just a brief summary of what was presented when they did request those positions. So I'm going to let Stephanie speak in regards to the reclass for the building inspector.
Thank you, Mayor and Council Member. So this reclass is to create a new position, acknowledging the increased expertise and responsibilities of one of our employees right now. It's an opportunity to create a position that promotes professional growth within our organization, with in mind just keeping that employee retention there. The inspector positions are ones that kind of flip over quite a bit. The retention is really low. We think this is a great way to this one specific employee to keep him on board while acknowledging what he's bringing to our organization. The inspector 2 position, it's not a new position in the metro area. It's pretty common, you know, cities close to us, Elk River, Rogers, like Brooklyn Park, they all have an inspector 2 position as well. Again, it's an inspector that has a little bit more experience. This specific individual, he does help the building official quite a bit with reviews and inspections on both the commercial and residential sides when the building official is gone. He does step up a lot in this position, would be responsible for making like the code interpretations and determinations when the building official is gone, and also help those other inspectors with learning. So, any questions I can answer?
I think so.
So the next position will be the engineering tech two or three. Tech three, is it two? Two. To civil engineer one, and Bruce is going to talk about that.
This individual has been an engineer in training since starting here. They need to pass two exams to become a professional engineer, pass their license, the fundamentals of engineering exam, and then the professional engineering exam. This individual has passed the FE exam and has recently taken the PE exam and is waiting to hear if he passed. Feels pretty confident, so I'm pretty confident that he will as well. So that's what the purpose of this position, this reclass is to assign this individual as a civil engineer. Right now, they work under the direction of other licensed engineers. They can't sign plans, reports, things like that. They have to do their work under the supervision of somebody else as a engineering technician, but upon passing the PE, he'll be able to go off and actually take on a larger role in engineering, begin preparing and signing plans and reports, things like that. So when staff passes their PE, we like to promote them from engineering technician to civil engineer. So it's been standard practice, and that's the purpose of this position reclass.
All right, keep moving.
The next one is the GIS technician two. I'm not sure.
Sure. So this is obviously a new position that we're proposing. Right now, we have numerous staff working on geographic information systems tasks across numerous departments. We also have LOGIS, who supplements our duties, the things that we work on with 100 staff hours. This position would allow the staff that currently are working on GIS related activities, again, which is numerous staff across numerous departments. We could have one person doing those tasks. Those other folks will obviously work with that person, but that would free all of those other staff up to do work that they are not getting done now or not getting done in as timely a manner. This person, this new GIS technician, would help to basically get our GIS system up and running. Again, we have numerous folks with numerous skill levels doing different GIS-related tasks, but we really don't have a integrated GIS system that everybody can use real efficiently and effectively. So we'd like to have somebody on board who could really lead that effort and take us kind of into the next century. We're really behind where we should be for a city of our size. Most other cities have dedicated GIS staff, and we do not, and we think there'd be a great benefit to the city for having this individual on staff. Steph, do you want to add anything?
No, not much, but just, you know, the GIS system that we have right now is very minimum. It just barely meets our needs right now. And it is a system that can definitely help the residents of the community, help city staff performing job duties and such. And what we really want to do is just build our system and be at that capacity as other cities are. You know, a lot of us have worked in cities where we have very good functioning GIS systems, and it is a system that is lacking here, and it definitely would just help the quality of us working, having this position on board.
Michael?
So is this essentially GIS software development or utilization of the software?
At this point, utilization of the software, yeah. Building the system that we have in place right now, adding the layers that are needed.
Does this reduce any costs from LOGIS? Am I understanding that right? Are we paying LOGIS and this person would take that off, or no?
It is my understanding, no. We would still have to pay that $63,000 a year because they do maintain the software, they house it.
Yeah, the majority of the cost to Logis for our GIS system is really just the hosting fee. They do provide approximately 100 hours a year of labor hours where we can ask them to build a new layer in it. But when we looked at the level of layers we could have, both to support staff internally and what we could build to provide more information to the public, it's really tough to get that done with that 100 hours. The way Logis is pricing, they kind of tier their pricing, so we don't necessarily pay for the hour labor behind it. We buy a tier that comes with certain number of hours just to maintain it on the back end. That takes up most of the 100 hours that they provide. So like Bruce was saying, this position really just build out those new layers in a much more timely manner. One of our, I guess, more recent examples that we did was create, which is through our GIS system, and it's a public facing, is to create the development map. So if residents are aware of it, and I'll preface it with that, they can go on and see, you know, what's being built at this intersection versus going to Facebook and trying to sift through, is that an accurate answer or not? They can go see firsthand. We can put the development plan in there and all sorts of information. We could do that for a number of different things. You know, maybe it's stormwater ponds. People oftentimes go, hey, my stormwater pond looks dirty. We can put inspection information in there to show like kind of the timing of when maybe bigger work is needed for stormwater ponds. Yeah, it's the opportunities are great. What we could do with it, it's just timing and the available time that we have to build those are limited right now.
One thing I'd like to add to, which I thought was pretty fascinating when we met as staff, is talking with the police department and how some cities have their GIS online for the residents too, and the residents can go on there and look at like crime analysis and mapping and just that sort of information. That's pretty cool, pretty interesting.
Dan?
Is that position that would be beneficial to have versus an outsourced company that kind of experts in programming those, the GIS maps, things like that? Or is that a unique expertise that you have someone, or would you, I guess what benefit over like outsourcing something like that if we told them what we wanted? Or are there companies that would do that?
Yeah, no, we price that and it would be very expensive. Well over what we would have to pay a staff person full time.
Sense.
All right.
So the next one is a full-time street maintenance worker.
So Mayor, Council, this position is proposed to help us keep up with the city's growth. Again, we in past years we've talked about having kind of a sweet spot of having one FTE maintenance worker for every 1,445 residents. Seems to be about the right spot, so we're proposing to add maintenance workers as the city continues to grow. We also have a lot of new streets that we have to take care of, and our stormwater system is one of the primary drivers of this position. We have the newly adopted Stormwater Management Facilities Maintenance Program, and we are just starting to get into that this year. We're going to have some consultants survey some of the ponds, some of the ponds that are closest to the receiving waters that they discharge to, and we're going to have we're going to go out and clear those ponds so consultants can get in there and survey those ponds. But moving forward, so we're going to be doing some clearing this year, but we're also going to be starting to do some dredging of ponds once we identify which ponds to start dredging first. With the ones that are filling up with sediment, we need to dredge those out and clean those out, and that's going to be an in-house effort. So this position is going to be needed to help with those duties as well. We're also finding that a lot of our stormwater infrastructure, catch basins, manholes, things like that in streets, you may see once in a while we'll have a street closed out. We're doing several in the core here where all of a sudden the rings underneath the catch basin are degrading and water is starting to get out into the street, causing sinkholes around the catch base and things like that. So we really need to step up our proactive inspections of all of those structures as well before sinkholes start forming. So we're trying to step up that whole stormwater management effort, and that's one of the main duties of this position as well.
Okay. Chris?
Can you explain the capital associated with this position? I mean, if this position isn't hired, does that hook truck not come in? Or
if this position were not hired, we would likely push off that hook truck purchase as well, I guess.
All right.
So the next one is a building maintenance seasonal.
So the whole purpose of this position is, primary purpose is for groundskeeping duties around City Hall particularly, and then we have the cemeteries, and then the parking ramp. We have a lot of midsummer groundskeeping duties that building maintenance typically tries to get to. The last few years we've been supplementing their efforts with parks maintenance workers as time allows, and other seasonal workers in public works. But we're finding that we're not able to really keep up with a lot of the midsummer groundskeeping duties here at City Hall and out in our cemeteries. So that's really the whole purpose of this position, is to help staff keep up with those duties and let the other staff stay on the things that they're supposed to be working on and not pull them over here just to work on these items. So it's really necessary just to keep up with day-to-day groundskeeping duties.
Ken?
Okay, and the last one is Happy Days Intern.
Sure. Well, certainly everyone is familiar with the exponential growth in our recreation programming, and all of these large events really require a lot of work throughout the year. Happy Days, the art fair, later on this month. Planning and activity occurs throughout the year for those one-day events, so that the intern would be a May through September position, ideally someone, a professional that's coming out of school or graduate school that wants to do that tech work. That'd be who would be seeking about $16,000 a year for that May through September period. And then also, I am planning on retiring as soon as early of 2027, and with that we anticipate restructuring in public works, which would likely include not replacing my role as the assistant public works director. So that would be a reduction in activity limited to parks planning and operation, maintenance, capital improvement program, that sort of thing. But still the learning curve in replacing what I've been doing for four plus decades is going to be significant. And so if we're able to replace my role within our organization, there's going to be a significant void in the time in terms of planning for all of these recreation programs. And so the intern seems to be a good economical fit for that bridge period, and then also recognizing the significant increase in programming we have year-round across recreation programs.
All right. Oh, Kristen?
I just wanted to ask, and maybe this is obvious, but just for the intern and the seasonal, like the wage comparison, are we paying the intern more just because we're thinking that they're coming in with an education and the seasonal worker may not?
Yes.
Okay. And then for the... just to go back a little bit to the comparison of wages for the building inspector versus the civil engineer. Am I reading it right that the civil engineer gets paid less than the building inspector?
I don't, I guess I'll try to answer. I don't know what the total payment is, but the number on this sheet would be the difference to what they're currently paid. So the current pay they're at for their current position, to reclass them, have a slightly different pay range, that's that difference.
Okay, because it says currently at 50, 73 for the building inspector one, and currently at 44.78 for the engineering tech three. So could the difference in wages just be because how long they've been here? I just was thinking to myself, and I could be wrong here, but maybe that engineers should get paid more than building inspectors, but I don't want to like make a problem of nothing. I just purely asking for understanding.
So the building inspector is currently at step six of the building inspector one pay scale. The proposal would go to step six of a new pay scale. Mm-hmm. The engineering tech three is currently at step six, but the new pay scale is much larger than the current one, so they would move, still get an increase to pay slightly, but move to step three. And then understanding that there's more duties and expertise to learn and things of that nature. So the top pay scale of civil engineer one would be, based on these numbers, presumably higher or near building inspector two.
Okay. I don't feel like that answered my question, but yeah. Okay.
Step three is 88% of the top step six. So you would have to divide that out to see what the step six represents if you're going to compare the two.
So he's at his max that he can make right now, but over here he's only at level three and can go up like...
So he's getting paid less than the building inspector right now, but he has the potential to make more on the scale that he's moving
once
to.
Once he hits step six.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the question was, why is he getting paid less than the building inspector, I guess?
Because we still look at the overall like percent increase for getting reclassified, and that just within, is it 10%? I can't remember the amount. If we don't give somebody a 15, 20% increase...
5%, I think we usually target.
That's why. We still stay within the range of a step because he still has three steps to earn also.
And to add to that, and maybe I'm not answering your question even worse, but when we do our pay equity report, we need to assign points to every position. Those points correlate to the duties assigned to the positions, the expertise involved. So, in engineering tech three, to Bruce's point earlier, was they can work on plans, but they're not the final signer of those documents. They really lack the authority under just laws and licensing requirements to be able to sign those plans. Where the building inspector, based on the points and the duties, and there's a whole process that HR goes through to assign that. The point difference on engineering tech three to a building inspector are. Engineering Tech 3 is a lower pointed position.
Okay, that's helpful. I appreciate that. Thank you.
All right, any other? Oh, Dan?
Real quick, what position, I just can't remember that out of my head, did we approve? Was that an engineer that we approved a few weeks ago?
Patrol officer.
Yeah, a few weeks ago was a patrol officer.
Okay, so we approved one position then for next year, and then these are the other ones that...
That's reflected on this sheet. That
yeah. And the only other thing I'd just throw out there, my two cents on something. If we end up doing the GIS technician, I would encourage to find someone that's really excited about AI too. Like, it's amazing how quickly AI can use and create some of these maps. It's a great tool to use with the GIS kind of stuff. So, just two cents out there.
And if I could add, the numbers that are on here are based off of the 3% COLA. We currently are looking at the market rate in comparable cities, so it's subject to change, and then of course the county council overall is part of the budget discussion, but I just wanted to add that this represents 3%.
All right.
So, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Nothing.
Brian, are you looking for feedback on the personnel? Do you want to go into capital first? Or?
I think we go into capital next, and we can maybe touch on, not necessarily dive into the details, but touch on the other line items in that summary list just related to the operating budget, and then we can close out with kind of some bigger picture strategy.
I think, first of all, I'd like to kind of explain the funding and what the core fund can be used for. So that is on the paper that says from city funds ordinance. And so the major funding for the capital that's listed, and again, this is an all-in capital sheet. If you go to the very top left corner, of your big sheet, you'll see the funding breakdown. And so it says fleet is a small amount. That's for amounts that have come back for the sale of city vehicles. But it's the capital equipment fund and the core HRA fund. This sheet explains what the capital equipment fund can be used for and what the core HRA fund can be used for. So it's basically capital equipment expenditures or capital projects that are in our CIP document. So as you'll note, the total for capital equipment on this sheet is $585,000, and the core HRA is $1,749,170. I'm going to have you turn to the second page. This is the core HRA cash flow as of today. And numbers that are in 26 on out are all subject to what happens in the TIF 14 district also. We've had a lot of values appeal last year, and we do have a lot of petitions in this year. That will affect the 14 valuation coming in. But as of right now, these are assuming, based off of current amounts that we just received, their July property tax, that we're getting that amount going forward, plus any additional amount based off of new growth. The orange line on the sheet basically is, I don't know what's happening for any land sales that will be occurring in the core. We have to pay back this fund for our land held for resale. So I'm not going to get into overall in regards to that. If you go down to the bottom under 2027, you'll see the amount reflected of the capital to offset the 2027 request of the $1,749,000. And so the other years that you see, 28, 29, 30 on out, these are based off of our previous CIP, the 26 through 35. We will be starting 27 through 36 here shortly. And so one good thing that did come about is the aerial went down $675,000 a year versus $1 million. So that cost did decrease, and that's now reflected in these numbers. And so when we look at this fund and you look at the balance, we also have to take into consideration that this also is funding our other CIP projects. And so we have to look at the overall condition of this building. I believe that our chiller is coming, it's kind of on its last leg, so to speak. That is $1 million. So just items that are out there. So I just don't want council to think that this is everything that's all that's out there. So, and the equipment fund on the next page, that will show the other $585,000 that offsets the capital expenditure. The $450,000 that is on that page under the 2027, that has to stay because that is the third year funding of the fire truck. It was $600,000 to begin with. It was always said that we would get $35,000 or so savings on paying for the chassis up front and then also selling the truck. So that is how that $450,000 was arrived at. And again, you can see the overall, you have to look at the cash balance of this account because the fund balance is being reflected by, this is another one that is getting paid back for TIF 14. And so the cash will not come in until a later date, and that's where you'll see the cash increasing, or the TIF 14. Funding. So again, it's just, I know there was questions last year about what's happening in these funds, and I just wanted to present that this is where they stand and what they can be used for. I know it's very heady, but and it's a lot of numbers throwing at you, but I just wanted to present them.
Thank you. Any questions on that? More to come.
And so next is if you wanted to go and look at the capital items that make up those dollar amounts, they're reflected by each individual department. And so we can go line by line if that's what council prefers, or if you want to just have questions on the major ones for time?
Well, there are a lot of items on here. Kristen?
May I propose that staff takes the first sweep at this of taking off what they want to take off, and then they come back with what they think needs to stay on?
I would assume this is all stuff that you want to stay on. Do you have like a goal that you want to give them, or like what do you mean by? I'm assuming if it's on this list, it's made it on the list for a reason. So
was there a different list of what all the staff had brought originally, and then this is the new?
This is the all in request based on many levels of staff feedback.
So this is all in.
Yeah. This is everything. Everything that they're asking for. So.
But is it whittled down from the original request?
No.
It is not.
This is everything.
That's what I'm thinking.
Chris?
Well, I guess I would be interested in a whittled down list. You use the word want.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather see a schedule of need.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I would agree. So I guess, are we understanding that these are all the wants and not necessarily the needs, or is these all considered needs by the staff?
So, I guess to start with on the summary list, we identified every, I'll say, sizable increase and kind of a reason why, whether it was operating expense. We identified equipment that would be a replacement, so it's obviously equipment we have that we want to maintain and keep in our fleet. And then there are some new requests. I would say some of the new requests are a job efficiency, kind of a benefit from that standpoint. Some are we just flat out we don't have enough vehicles for the number of staff that are using them. So, I think all of them are generally reasonable requests. Can we get away without some of them? Short answer is yes, but it is something where talking through staff, department heads are meeting with their staff and kind of identifying how can we continue to provide the services we do, maybe expand in some cases. That's really how this list was created. So I don't know if we maybe want to focus on the new requests first for tonight and have council understand that more. Maybe that's a decent first approach.
Kristen, thank you. Are you, I think we have to give, if we were going to say remove some of these, we'd have to give them a target. So like remove 50% from each department, or like, I guess what's the metric you would want them to measure if they were efficient, if they efficiently, or they moved, removed enough? Like, I think.
Yeah. I understand what you're saying, and this may be an unfair response, but I think you guys know what you need best, and you know this is the ask all of everything. This is the transparent list. I appreciate you bringing that to us, and I appreciate that staff get to see this, but now you guys could bring us what you think is actually important, being the subject matter experts of the city, that we can then decide from there. That's, I guess, my ask. And maybe that's not the way to do it, but I don't know if I want to be the one that takes everything off instead of you guys giving us everything, and then we're the ones that decided that someone doesn't get something when maybe Brian didn't think that we needed this anyways.
Mayor, if I may.
Yeah.
That's a fair point. That's a lot of how we approached it last year. I'd equate this list in front of you similar to the past years in. Staff recognizes council would love a near minimum or 0% levy increase, but like we saw with the road funding and our street needs and other staffing needs, there were years where the levy was substantially higher than anyone truly desired, and this is a way to show council, like, these are requests similar to like the part-time building maintenance position that was on last year. It ultimately got dropped off. So these aren't necessarily requests that wouldn't go away. They might come back in the future. So again, just trying to make sure council understands why staff desires them. Again, I think we all recognize that not everything on the list is going to stay, but you know, we do want an opportunity to explain why a piece of equipment or a position may be beneficial to add, and make sure council has the information to move forward.
Dan?
I think we're going to still go to the higher level and say, yeah, I think we're going to have discussions how much of the TIP fund you want to use or that, and how much of the levy, and then what percentage. And I think last year worked pretty well in that, you know, we said 5% or whatever we said. I'm not saying we'll do that this year, but whatever percentage we do, then you know, staff can decide. Maybe we can wait a year on this vehicle, and then this staff, this, and then higher level they can figure out how they want to do it versus even saying it all has to be from this or cut this down versus that down, but just say this is what we feel comfortable with, and then see if we can make that work, you know.
Chris?
What's proposed here, it looks like 17.3% increase. Is that sound about right, that staff is coming to us and saying that that's a lot? 4,041,000 divided by the 23,338,000 from last year's total levy, 17.3%.
This is the total request. We still have offsetting other revenues outside of the levy. So these were the respective line items that had changed or increased. So if we have any other sort of income revenue that increased on line items, that's not reflected on Gibbs's $4
million. I'm just going to say I don't care for what's being done here, presenting this all-in budget. This isn't what I want to see. Literally, this feels like a Christmas list, and this isn't where I want to start. So I guess I'm understanding you would like us to come back and say 6.5%, for instance. That's our goal, and then staff would whittle down and figure out how to get to 6.5%. Is that our goal here, or what we're trying to do?
So we did last year, essentially.
Yeah, there's two major funding components to this. There's the TIP 14 proceeds. You know, I guess big question is, how do you want to see that fund balance maintained looking forward? So how much of that do we want to use? Do we want to offset most of that versus levy increase? Do you want to retain some of that and do a little bit more of a levy increase? Because that's kind of some direction we're looking for. And I'll reiterate, if there's a piece of equipment or a position that want to understand more, you know, I think that's a great time to do it is now during the process. Maybe it's not a this year, maybe it's a, you know, that makes great sense, but looking at, you know, our desired levy increase, hold off till next year.
Kristen?
Am I remembering correctly that last year you brought us a whittled down list and then you showed the list of the original asks?
Yes.
Okay, so I guess that is where I'm coming from, is that that's what I was thinking would happen today, maybe, and I'm so happy that the staff gets to see what was asked, and then that you guys decided to make a narrower cut, and then we get to give you a number from there. I think without, like, lack of better articulation, do we have to be the bad guys for everything, to cut everything?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, to word it differently, you are the final decision makers. Obviously, this is a group effort to get to there, but you know, I guess I wouldn't necessarily want council to say whittle this down and we whittle some off, and then we come back and you guys say no, that's not enough.
Brian.
So, I mean, if you guys all have a target in mind, that would be helpful to know. Maybe we get there, maybe we don't, but at least you guys can ask questions and understand why, and can support a final decision. So is it knowing that our at a minimum it's roughly 4% increase? I mean, is there any wiggle room on that offsetting with TIP 14 proceeds? I guess that's kind of the general
You want to understand those desires.
So I've learned this a while ago. Ms. Lund was helpful to share this with me, and I've used it in other organizations as well. For like our days cash on hand, our reserves, we don't want to bring it down to zero because we have to have days cash on hand so that we meet all of our requirements, and if we need to rebond for something, we have a good credit rating because we have the money in the bank. Does that apply to these core/HRA funds, equipment revolving funds? Like if we spent those to zero, would that be bad in the same way that spending all of our days cash on hand would be? Like why wouldn't we use every dollar in these funds to offset taxes?
So your question is related to our general fund, and that is where we have to have 50% in the fund, basically because we get our tax money in July and December. So that's the 6-month period.
Yeah.
And then the purpose of talking about the different items within the core, that is at your discretion if you want to spend it to zero, but you don't have a rainy day in other funds outside of the general fund, which is normally funded by the property tax levy.
Mm-hmm. By not spending the core HRA fund or the equipment revolving fund down to zero, we have a rainy day fund, and those would be used for things like a fire truck catches on fire and we have to replace it. Now we have means to do so. Not that fire trucks catch on fire. But, okay, so I understand maybe having some in those funds, but I also don't understand. Keeping too much in those funds means that we're funding these other things with levy increases. So, I mean, my attitude would be we use as much of those funds as possible while we have them. But then going back to Kirsten and Chris, I think this is a list of everything. This is great because it shows us what you guys are looking for and what you need. It gives us eyes on things like how old our vehicles are and what the point system is. But to their point, this is still a very broad list. But I think what I might be hearing is, okay, if the broad list, you don't want to see a broad list because it's too broad and there's too many requests, then give us a target to aim so we can narrow it down. So I think if we're going to ask them to narrow this list down, I think last year worked well where we said, here's your 6.5%. However you get there, you get there. Let us know if you get close. And then we looked at it. So I don't know if that's the direction. I feel like that worked well last time. So it's just coming up with a number.
I'll get you afterwards.
Ms. Lund, so they're in yellow, or not yellow, blue. The equipment replacements, and that was what you were saying we could use the HRA funds for. So is that what's already built in on the HRA fund spreadsheet?
So the capital total includes replacement and new. And so the overall total of capital is the $2,384,170. So that includes the blue and the green on this sheet. And so the sheet is funded basically by the fleet fund, the $50,000, the capital equipment fund, the $585,000, and the core HRA of $1,749,000. There's no reflection of the $1,749,000 represents replacement or new. It's a combination. It's just held overall funding. And because it strictly says on the policy is that it will cover capital equipment expenditures that are in the 10-year CIP or as part of the annual general fund budget not authorized by a majority of city council.
Okay, so the colored items then, we have the ability to cover them with the HRA revolving loan and whatever.
Yes, those are the capital requests.
And you said that was, will you say that number again?
It is on the second sheet up in the corner. And it's also reflected in the dashboards in red.
All right. So then, rather than $4,041,000, we're only talking about like whatever $1.6 million.
If we were to spend those funds down to zero.
If we were spending that down and approved all of those.
And again, this number is subject to change because this only has a 2% COLA or a 2% market rate adjustments, and that was part of our personnel policy, was about the market rate adjustments. So that number is currently being worked on because we just received it, looking at 20 cities. So that this number is subject to change. So this is just kind of an overall where we are as of today. And I guess the direction was, is, and again, the reason why council is seeing everything is just that everything is out there on the table that you see all, so that it, when it comes back at, say, next year or the year after, that you have seen it before, that this is a request that is not going away. And so, what, and then we are looking at, are you looking at a 6% or 7%? And what is that makeup when staff goes back and looks at it? How do we get to that? The same thing with the capital. Do you just want to spend, knowing that we have $450,000 that's already locked in with that fire truck that's coming from those funds? Is it that you're just saying that I want to keep $1 million in the fund at the end of the year? That sort of thing. And so it's not that council is picking out and saying this is cut. It's going to be, comes down to staff, and then that will be presented back to you, and then that would be whether or not you want to change items. And I don't know if that's a...
So let me just say this, see what the temperature in the room is by the council. Tell me if this meets your criteria, whether you like the number or not. If we said, okay, no more than a 5% this year, we already have 4% guaranteed, that leaves you 1% for spending, but you can spend the funds down to $100,000. So essentially you get 1% to cover everything in the black, and then you figure out how to cover everything in the, you choose what you want covered in the green and the blue, with the understanding you can spend down to $100,000 in the funds. So essentially you're getting...
As an example, yes. I don't know if we would want to go down to $100,000, but...
Right. Sure. Well, that's why
maybe
I asked what the ramifications...
Maybe can,
but. That's why I asked what the ramifications was for having... Like, in our general fund, we don't want to go down to zero. It's really bad. On these funds, how low can we go and feel like it's a comfortable rainy day fund? So... Not that that's a number, but if I said 5%, you get 1% to cover things in black, and you get these funds to cover green and blue, bringing it down to a certain amount, that would be the direction you'd be looking for as far as where the money comes from and what the goal is.
If you were saying to go down to $100,000, you'd be adding capital back, because the balance in that fund right now, after taking $1.7 million out, is about $2.3 million. And so that was why you have to look at the future request of the capital in regards to, you know, and by 2030, we're at $556,000. And again, this is strictly based off of all in on TIF 14. And you would have to change the policy if you wanted to fund anything with the core fund that covered general operations, because it says strictly capital. That also just
I guess I'd like to hear your opinion. How would you like to see that fund utilized or brought down? I mean, kind of how you have it outlined here, like you said, by 2030?
Well, I think...
what are your concerns with it?
Well, if you're bringing it down to $100,000, we can't even get to $100,000.
So that's what he said. Let's put him aside. And how about you and me just talking?
That's a fun example.
Yeah. Okay.
Right, so just you and me talking with everyone else here. What would you like to see? Like, what's your recommendation? Kind of what you proposed here by 2030 was the 500? Or what would... Like, obviously, you've been great with our budget. You've done this so long, and I really trust you. We have great reviews, audits. What are your views on what we should do with that and bring it down to our handle?
Well, I think items that were within the capital need to come off, because it is an all-request budget, because normally people don't get everything the request asked for. That's just a general. And I think you should keep a balance in the HRA account, because this building is 20 years old. And we don't have a lot of other funds on hand to cover for it, unless you're going to start levying for the additional cost of everything that could be occurring. All our buildings are getting older, and that, and nothing is cheap anymore.
I think we could go back, look at our CIP plan. That's the 10-year outlook on capital expenses, roads, equipment, etc., and try to figure out what's maybe an acceptable bottom dollar amount, keep that rainy day amount just in case something pops up. We can reassess that before the next meeting. So utilize the majority of this, really all of it, for capital, making sure we don't short ourselves for the just in case purchase, and then kind of focus on the levy for just the operating expenses. So I think that's hitting what you were getting at. So kind of the final direction is maybe that levy target percentage to look at operating increases if you needed.
Above the 4% or to include the 4%?
To include the 4%.
Dan?
Yeah, I think that's good. And I do like the idea, too, of, you know, and obviously I know you're not saying this, but if we just bought everything this year, you know, we can only do that for so many years, and all of a sudden we can't, and it's going to be a big shift then of, you know, like you said, the future CIP things, future things. So I think just kind of all might take a little bit each year and let it grow and keep that balance for them. And that's what I'm asking. That's a great point about there's, you know, things we want to do and on the property, you know, in the landscaping and things, or whatever else is going to break down with time. So I wouldn't want to drain it down much lower than you're comfortable and use a little bit each year and keep it there. So it's kind of that, you know, this is what we have for this, and we're going to focus on the general operating, you know, for the levy. Otherwise, kind of like we'll get a bubble in 10 years, then when that's gone, or 5 years, that's gone, that council is going to say, well, how are we going to pay for everything? Then it's going to be a big increase again.
Mm-hmm. Chris?
Well, I'm going to reiterate, I don't like seeing the all-in budget, so I don't like this at all. I come back with something that removes things that are extra, and I would start with Fuel Island, Hook Truck, Wellness Sauna, Wellness Chair, Massage Chair. I can't imagine that's somebody's going to sit in front of our public and say that a Wellness Sauna is an awesome use of city dollars. I think we need to tighten up our wants and get this capital down to needs, scrutinize positions, and then, I don't know, a percentage like you suggested is fine, but that doesn't mean we're just opening up the spigot on capital. It needs to be less.
Do you have a number?
I don't, because I'm not a city administrator, department head, knowing exactly what really needs to be gotten, and I can't prioritize these things because I don't know overall every day's ins and outs of city operations. So I would rely on department heads to work that out with the city administrator.
Okay. Kristen?
I think I would just like, even if you guys don't whittle this down, I think I would like to see a number when we come back next meeting that you're willing for us to spend out of that fund and what we need left over. So buy it all if we can, right? Like, I've never been the person to say, like, cut the sauna, right? But I just want to make sure that I, like Chris said and like I've said before, like, I really know what you really need. I appreciate the transparency. I appreciate that you guys are sharing with us what is needed now, or, you know, wanted now and needed later. But yeah, I want to see what we can cover with that other fund so we know it won't necessarily be like an increase, and what we need to keep. And I don't know, we can go from there.
Yeah.
I wanted to mention, is the proposed increase in the city council salaries already included in this? Or is that a minuscule?
That's, I mean, pretty small in the 4 million total.
It was like 20,000. But I do want to mention also all union contracts are open for negotiation, so to be within a 1% range, I don't think it's going to get there. It's going to get to that 5%. So just putting it out there. And I guess the only other thing is in regards to the core HRA fund, it's written that it is capital. If you're looking at for operations, you could change the ordinance.
Right. I wasn't suggesting using that for operations.
Just the capital.
No. We do have to get to the third item here, but the consensus from the council. Shannon, sorry, do you have something quick?
Just two little comments. Remember, we just guaranteed a loan for $64,000 every month, so we do need to have a place of some sort of money holder. So when you guys are thinking money and how much we get to spend, we do need to have at least 6 months of spending, I think, having that in our slush fund that we can at least be secure enough if that ARAA fails to pay their monies. And then can we have this large 11 by 14 printed out next time? And or I missed it in my piece where this sheet...
That's the summary one?
Yeah, the summary and all that.
With yeah, the 5, I'm 6, sorry, 6, I 6 point 5, 7 printed minutes. Everything else and I forgot to print this.
Okay, thank you. That was it.
All right, so am I summarizing this correctly? Reduce the list. Department heads go to the city administrator, bring back a new list, and then map out what funds we have available and what they could be used for. Yeah, exactly. With Dan's request to where is that limit? We don't want to spend down, it was an example. We don't want to spend down to 100,000, but we don't know what we'd want to spend down to right now. I mean, we have numbers here, which is great, but is that suggested? Is that bare minimum? Where is that line drawn? Because if we do have capital, and we don't spend it, because we have a gigantic HR or rainy day fund, then we're having the taxpayers make up the difference. So where is that line drawn, or where you're comfortable for it? Is that enough for right now?
Yep.
All right. City budget's always the fun part.
He's like, in Coon Rapids, they gave me whatever I wanted.
All right, so real quick, item number 3, wage theft and project labor requirements.
Mayor, I can kick this off quickly and kind of get us up to speed on why we're ultimately here, I think, is, you know, we met back in May to talk about these wage theft and project labor requirements. I felt like there was consensus enough on council to say that we liked provisions in any agreement where public dollars are being provided to a project to say if the contractor or developers found guilty of wage theft laws, that we want an ability to claw back those public dollars. Some of the other discussion points seemed like there was interest enough to learn more, but wanted more information on it. That information, at least examples that Councilmember Buescher provided me, were attached to the case. Specific to this being on this work session agenda is with the Trident project that you're going to see in a few minutes here. We utilized a Brooklyn Parks TIF agreement that called out the items directly related to wage theft. They have a TIF agreement that calls them out more specifically, puts it more in front of the developer to say, hey, we're going to watch this. If you violate these laws, we're going to consider coming back and trying to claw back those public dollars. That was at my direction. I thought there was a consensus enough. Agenda got posted, and as you can see, Councilman Riley, backing Mayor Heineman, requested this discussion. It's my understanding, Councilman Riley, maybe chime in a little bit more, but because the policy wasn't official, there's a discussion desired of saying, should those provisions be in the TIF agreement that you're about to see in a few minutes?
Well, and I guess because of time, I guess it's my understanding that this is not a time-sensitive case. The Trident is not a time-sensitive case as far as the development agreement, but the TIF and the reimbursement parts are. I guess, could we, well, I mean, we're not going to settle this in 10 minutes, I don't think. This is, a large discussion. Could we, well, I guess maybe just talk about, can we switch the agenda to not approve the development of the TIF development agreement and create the district and the reimbursement that I think are more time sensitive?
Yeah, from a noticing standpoint, this case did require a public hearing. That's on tonight's agenda. The project as a whole, you guys have seen multiple times and generally support the creation of a TIF district. So tonight, at a minimum, I would say we could create the district, approve the interfund loan that's tied to it based on some administrative financing costs that we see with these projects. And then, if desired, we could delay the agreement and the context within that agreement to a later meeting. But tonight, we could hold a public hearing.
So that would be my preference, that we do what needs to get done, and then, you know, in theory or whatever, we've already approved the idea, and it's just now the details. And so now bringing it back to why I didn't like this, yeah, we all received information, and yeah, we all said we wanted more information from it, but we never discussed what a policy looked like, what it should or should not have, or what should be in an agreement. So I was kind of shocked that it ended up in an agreement when none of us agreed to any of that. So we could have a couple more minutes, but I guess I would want to have a discussion soon of what it does or does not include.
Kirsten?
So I'm very grateful for you guys putting that language in and attempting to do something, and I do agree that there was consensus of us all wanting to do something and wanting to learn more, but we just weren't maybe quite there yet on everything yet. We needed more time and more information in front of us to create something. So I would agree that I think we should take the agreement off the table for now to approve the TIF district and the funding portion, and then revisit the language within this contract specifically, and then also a policy together. And I would suggest sooner rather than later, once again, that we get this on the table, because we are continuing to approve development within our city, and we've all agreed that this is a priority for us to look at. Whether it looks the way that I want it to look, or Ryan wants it to look, or where we agreed together, it looks like that's not the point. At least it was brought to your guys' attention that it was a priority of ours to get back, and it hasn't come back yet, and now we've had multiple things come up in between in the interim that have been development related that we haven't been able to include this language. And I also just want to specifically point out the final sentence of paragraph H relating to Exhibit C. The language is attempting to limit a general contractor's downstream liability, but Minnesota's Construction Worker Wage Protection Act prohibits agreements that indemnify contractors from liability. So I think we really need to be cautious if there's language within this contract that would invalidate the contract itself. And I put this in front of a labor lawyer who was the one who showed that to me. And so I just want you, like, if we're going to talk about, you know, making sure that we have clear language, especially when we're giving someone millions of dollars in public finance assistance, subsidy from our city, we should really be reviewing this a little bit more strictly.
All right. And I second it with Chris, just because I feel like we didn't finish talking about it, but I understand why you think that, because I think we did leave it a little bit vague, and we did ask for action, so this is what came forward. So I think it was the right idea, but maybe we have to wait a little bit to talk about it. I'm actually okay with this being in here, but in the spirit of transparency and making sure it's something that everybody's had discussion on, if we can delay that portion and still move the project forward, I think that works for me. So anybody else?
So would we want to change, or I mean, like, well, we're doing the agenda, do we need to talk about that part, or that would just be part of the motion that comes out?
Well, if you would like to make a motion on that, we can't discuss where we're going to vote and stuff like that on here, but...
No, procedurally,
yeah,
for our
procedurally
meeting.
For the agenda, I think we can leave it as is and just address the TIF agreement specific as part of a, you know, resolution to table.
Table it, yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah, just, and then we don't have to modify an agenda.
Sure.
Yes.
Can we also make a plan for when we're going to re-come back on
the next work session?
Not just the agreement, but for like the education portion also?
The policy discussion will be next work session.
Okay, and agreement as also. Are you guys able to bring back language before the Thursday before that so we can review it?
I guess I would plan to just attach the same information and not necessarily draft a policy quite yet, just because I don't know that staff has enough direction yet to start drafting a policy.
Yeah, we can't ask him that.
No,
I don't believe you do.
I was meaning yeah. Like the agreement of like the TIF district, though. Like what I just mentioned, is someone going to look at that and decide if that shouldn't or shouldn't be in there?
We can look at that specifically.
And why are we using Taft?
They're bond council. So they're the ones that have to be. It can't be me. It has to be them.
Okay.
So for the record, I didn't write this agreement.
No, I knew you didn't. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, we have stuff left in the work session that's important, especially our, everything, but we got some conversations to be had. So we'll go ahead and We're not adjourning. We're
going to recess.
Recess. That's what the word is looking for. We're going to recess the work session and come back after the regular council meeting.